From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into the Tuesday, June 16th episode of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. My name is Neil McCready. Today on the show, I have about an hour-long conversation with my friend, former colleague at the Mobile Register, Mike Griffith, who now covers the Georgia Bulldogs for the AJC. Mike has covered Tennessee, Auburn, Alabama, Michigan State, and now Georgia in his illustrious reporting career, one of the best reporters I've been around, an absolute bulldog, pardon the pun, of reporters. Very, very good. You'll love his insights on Lane Kiffin, on a football season with COVID, on what's happening in the SEC East with Georgia and Florida, his thoughts on Mike Leach at Mississippi State, Sam Pittman at Arkansas. A lot of things, just kind of a far-ranging conversation. NLI rights, a name, image, and likeness, I should say. Talked about that a good bit as well. Mike agrees with me that that's going to happen and that's going to dramatically change the landscape of college football and college athletics moving forward. So we talk about all of those things, and we'll get to that in a minute. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Exxon. It's on Highway 6 West in Oxford. You can download the SpeedPass Plus app on your phone, on your smart device, and never have to touch anything when you fill up at the Oxford Exxon. Of course, we recommend that you go in, try the ribs, check out their beer selection, their soda selection, all the snacks, plate lunch, daiquiris, everything you could want. Always great service, great people there at the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford, located right next door to the Oxford Crystal. Drive-thru is open there and delivery options as well at Oxford Crystal. They've got the Hangover Crystal Sandwich with fresh cracked eggs, bacon, egg, and cheese crystal, $1.69, available all day. It's getting hot. You can get the peach slushy. You can get the banana pudding shake. You can also get the always dependable breakfast, fresh cracked egg biscuits, bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage, egg, and cheese biscuit, the Scrambler breakfast bowls. And as always, you can get the Pick 5 for $5.55. That's at Oxford Crystal. And you can include the new Nashville Hot Chick in your Pick 5 for $5.55, 100% all white meat chicken breast at the Oxford Crystal, right next door to the Oxford Exxon. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number to call. Call it, ask for Corey Clark, tell Corey what Ford product you're looking for. He will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's right to the bottom line, no hassle, no haggle, you get your quote. And the rest is completely up to you. What I would recommend that you do is that you get that quote and you go ahead and get your deal done and you hop into a Clark Ford today. You'll love the product. You'll love the service after the sale. I tell you all the time, Corey wants to be your car guy. Corey wants to be your truck guy. He will prove that to you when you make the call. 662-257-1900. And guests, including Mike Griffith, join us on the Rafters Music and Food Hotline. Rafters on the Water is open. It's located at the Sardis Marina, so come experience outdoor dining unlike any place in North Mississippi. The menu offers shrimp and Mississippi catfish platters along with gourmet burgers and Louisiana-style po' boys served on Leidenheimer French bread. They're open Wednesdays and Thursdays, 3:30 to 10, Friday through Sunday, 11 to 10, a newly expanded picnic-style dining area, signature appetizers including Zydeco shrimp and crawfish egg rolls, live music, and a variety of fun cocktails including their famous house-frozen margarita. So go check it out. And if you're not quite ready to do that, or if you're in a hurry, you want to go, you want curbside, you can do that as well. That is always available at 662-712-6162. Now to the Rafters Music and Food Hotline and Mike Griffith of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. My longtime friend, colleague Mike Griffith of the AJC joins us. Mike, first of all, how's your I started to say, how's your summer going? Summer kind of just got started, but we're like 4 months into the longest summer ever. It's a bizarre time. I know it's been bizarre for you as well.
Yeah, it's been a tough offseason to keep up with, Neil. It's oftentimes hard enough to get a hold of the players, but, you know, just trying to follow them through social media, try to keep up with all the changes, you know, from the NCAA to the Autonomy 5 Power 5 commissioners to the state and federal regulations with COVID-19. It's kind of a fluid jigsaw puzzle that we try to put together every day and every week.
Obviously, I'm covering Ole Miss. You're covering Georgia. They're on the same schedules right now. They officially had the start of voluntary workouts a week ago. We're taping this on Monday the 15th. They started on Monday the 8th. What was Georgia's kind of – I know they did the baseline testing the way Ole Miss did from – I forgive me for not knowing this from your reporting. What was their, I guess, their baseline? How many guys, you know, were positive when they got there?
You know, they didn't release that information, you know, and you know, I was a little surprised by that. Obviously, they can stand, you know, behind HIPAA on that issue, but they didn't release the numbers. They did test everybody for COVID-19, even though that went beyond the SEC required policy. They took the next step and tested all their players. And I don't know how Ole Miss is doing their resocialization and workouts, but Georgia had it broke down into groups of 20 that were then subdivided into groups of 7. One way in and one way out through the weight room and the indoor facility, and the group stayed the same in the event that somebody tests positive for COVID-19, because then you have the potential quarantine situation and you're aware of who else might have been exposed in that workout group. Of course, what players do when they leave the facilities, Neil, that's up to them, but George is kind of hoping that they're being responsible and practicing the social distancing and wearing masks.
And you know they're not. I mean, they're college kids. They're like we were when we were college kids. I mean, there's going to be exposure. You and I were talking before we got started. There was a big rush party at Ole Miss. I'm not sure where exactly the party was. I think it was in Oxford, and I don't know whether any football players or basketball players or cheerleaders or anybody else were there or weren't there. I don't know, but it was, you know, there were some cases that came from that. That kind of thing is going to happen. You know, I've talked to some people, I'm curious if you have too, who don't necessarily think that some positives are the worst thing in the world. I mean, they first of all, it's important to note, and I've been saying this over and over, I'm sure you have too, the schools were told by health officials to expect positives. There would be positives when they got there, and there would be positives after they got there because they're acclimating to a new environment. Or to an environment that they weren't in for a while, there were going to be positives. Positives in June are not a bad thing.
Well, from the standpoint that, you know, we assume that these positives don't turn into, you know, complications. And, you know, and if they are complications, then there's a pretty good chance there was an underlying condition that wasn't diagnosed or might have been missed during the athlete's physical. But, you know, the point that I make is, you know, would they be positive if they were at home? Would they be positive if there wasn't football? I mean, the concept that they're any more at risk in a football facility or on a campus than they would be in their home communities is just, you know, doesn't take things into account, especially, and you and I both know this, these student-athletes and their athletic community, for the most part, they're 95% quarantined to one another anyway. They go to their own football building and their own meeting rooms and their own academic support center. They go to the same parties. And how often do they really mix with the general public? Not very often. But if they're at home, going to the local gym, going to the family cookout, going to the church, they're dealing with people from all sorts of age groups and backgrounds and visitors from out of town. And I suggest that these kids are safer on campus than they would be in their home community.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's one of the reasons I've said this for a while, that if you accept the premise that this virus was at least to some degree in our population in January and February, I do. I don't know about you. I think it was here then. If you believe that, then you have to look around and say, okay, well, at all these campuses, at the University of Georgia and the University of Alabama and the University of Arkansas and Ole Miss and University of Texas and University of New Mexico, and name your favorite 10 schools, I don't care. There were college kids in dorms at those schools. There were college kids in fraternity houses and sorority houses and in big classroom settings at those schools. There were college kids who went to parties on packed dance floors at those schools. There were college kids who ate in cafeterias buffet style cafeterias at those schools. There were whatever they went to basketball games in enclosed arenas like Rupp or Stegman or wherever, and so they were exposed to it. And please show me the breakout of young people. It just didn't happen. And so I don't think there's much question that the kids, in hindsight, and I don't have a personal fault with the shutdown in March. I have a fault with the continued shutdown after it became obvious that the shutdown maybe wasn't the greatest idea in the world. But regardless, the kids probably were safer on their college campuses. I'm not even talking about football anymore, Mike. I'm just talking about college kids in general. They were safer on those campuses where they were kind of confined to that community than they were spread all over the country, exposed to a lot of things that, you know, they hadn't been acclimated to in a while.
Yeah, and you know, and with the 24/7 care and the doctor's monitor. Although Neil, you just mentioned the buffet style dinner, and you know, I had it passed in my mind. I covered the NFL Combine the end of February and early March, and I thought, you know, talk about a potential melting pot for COVID-19 with reporters from literally every corner of the country, players from all over the country, coaches, scouts from all over the country sharing that same banquet room and interview room for 7 days. And I thought, well, I suppose it's possible there were people there and I didn't get it. But then I just remembered going through the media food line every day and touching the same scoop for food for the salad. And I'm thinking, oh, I absolutely got it. I absolutely had COVID-19 if it was in our country, because that combine had reporters from everywhere flying in on every airline through every airport. So I don't know if you ruined my day or made it, but I think I just realized that there's a pretty good chance I was probably exposed to that there.
Yeah, I think that day and age is over. I mean, the way like media meals in press boxes. First of all, I don't even know that we're going to be allowed in a press box this year. I'm curious to get your thoughts on that in a minute. But like media meals where we all touched the same spoon, that's done. There's no way anybody's doing that again.
Yeah, no, it's going to be grab and go stuff, and more than likely George's, you know, and I'm terribly spoiled here. I don't mind telling you, and you know, Claude Felton is the king of the public relations, and George's
one of the absolute best.
You know, the hospitality here is just so remarkable, and they're just, it's just such a first class program. But to your point, yeah, you know what they're talking about. And there is a group, the Football Writers, is working with COSIDA on this. And it's the same sort of reduction that you would expect for the fans. You know, Georgia put out a 225-page briefing on
that'd their be a hell of a briefing there, Mike.
Yeah, it's heavy paper, right?
Yeah.
They carved it in stone tablet. They put out the 225 pages on their resocialization plan across campus, and only, I don't know, 21 or 31 pages of it were pertaining to athletics. But they put out the three plans for a stadium, and it's pretty basic. You know, one, only essential personnel; two, limited personnel; three, everybody's there. I mean, pretty basic, right? But beyond that, you know, the media is looking at 20% and 50% models, and you know, in talking to the people that are part of the committee, it's the daily beat writers, the people that are there every single day, that attend all the press conferences and the games. Like, those are the people they want to keep. You know, the basement blog guys and some of the electronic media guys that, you know, that only show up to get their 2 minutes of video or radio or whatever. Those are probably going to be the people that aren't going to be. Photography passes will be considerably more limited because they'll be better spacing on the sideline, so there won't be as much room to work with on the sideline. So I think the photographers are going to get hit pretty hard. I'd say they're probably down to 20. That this is just guesstimating. If there's still social distancing in place, I would say you're looking at 20% photographers and maybe 40% or 50% reporters, and they might move some of those reporters out, you know, into the stands, like we've seen in auxiliary seating at championship games. Particularly if there's still social distancing in the stands, there'll be a little bit more room to operate, where they might put some covered area up and some tables out so they can distance the reporters from one another.
So bad news for Ray UGA. Is that what you're saying? He's probably not going to get a pass.
Yeah. I still don't really know who that is. That's kind of funny. These social media phenomena kind of emerge. Yeah.
Rise above hate, Mike. So what do you hear when you talk to Georgia people? What is the, I started to say, what do they tell you off the record? But you're not going to tell me what they tell you off the record. What do they kind of give you at us? Do they have a, I thought Scott Strickland at Florida, I'll do it this way. I thought he had a great answer the other day where he said, you know, this is something that it's our job to plan for everything, but I don't have to make this decision for a while. And I'm going to take as much time as I can so I can have as much information, because this is a decision I can basically wait till August to do. And I think it's that way at a lot of these schools. But do you get a, I know when I talk to some people at Ole Miss, I get a sense for what they expect. What about you when you talk to people at Georgia? Is there a sense that, you know, here in the middle of June, what they truly expect for that first weekend of September?
Yeah, you know, Greg McGarrity's kind of on the same page as Strickland, and that's kind of been Greg Sankey's message from the start. You know, we're building the bridge as we cross the river, and, you know, and we don't have to make decisions, you know, any sooner than we need to, and the more information you have, the better. It'd be like asking the coach, like, well, what's going to be your first play call in the first game? You know, well, you know, let me see what the defense has got and who I've got on the field, and that's kind of where we're at with COVID-19. You know, well, let's see what, you know, let's be honest, let's see what the political climate is. You know, let's see where the states are at. Or, you know, are some of the states going to, you know, put shelters back in place if COVID-19 spikes? Or are we going to be all systems go? Or, you know, what's the climate going to be that week? And you know, what's our government going to tell us? You know, first and foremost, you've got to abide by the state laws or your local laws. So that's number one. You do what you can have all the, you know, desire to do what you want, but if it's not legal, you can't do it. So number one, you're bound to the local government and what their restrictions are. I think what they're publicly talking about is best case scenario, but you know that they're prepared for worst case. And I think they're leaning towards at minimum some socially distanced limited seating. I don't think anyone believes that the stadiums will be completely empty at this point. Indoor seating might be different for an indoor dome stadium. Maybe that's different. I don't know. But again, that's something that's kind of in the works right now. So, man, that's a long way of saying that nobody really knows yet, Neil. But I think they're guardedly optimistic.
What do you think? What's your expectation? You're a smart guy. You've got a good gut feeling. You think we're having a football season? And if so, what do you think it looks like?
Yeah, I think we're having a season. I'm guardedly optimistic too. I think at the beginning there'll be limited attendance. You know, that's, you know, early on. Alabama plays Georgia September 19th. I'm sure you have your predictions for what Alabama will say before that game. But I think for the most part there will be limited seating at most of the games in the month of September. And I think this is something that, you know, they want to be responsible with. And it's, you know, to me it's. It's, I don't know if chess, I think it's more of a poker game than a chess game. And here's what I mean by that, Neil. If, you know, and you and I are both kind of black helicopter guys, because we do know that there really is a lot more that goes on behind the scene. That's why we often come up with these conspiracy theories, because we know there are, we both know from our reporting experiences that there are indeed conspiracies. All the talk about June 1st, remember that in May, all the discussion, and there was supposedly only one athletic director who didn't want to do it June 1st, and it was big bad Philip Fulmer, which I don't believe he was the only one. But all of that really was to set up June 8th, because now June 8th doesn't seem like so early. Because you go, well, you know, at least they didn't start June 1st. That's what everybody's talking about. Obviously, they're being very careful here. Well, it's kind of like when you go to the drive-thru and you see the three different drink sizes. Right, it's always designed to get you to buy the big one. Nobody really is supposed to buy the middle one. That's never supposed to be. I mean, you can go and take business flight. It's the same way here. I mean, these are really, really smart people that are in really strong and powerful positions, and they didn't just fall into those spots. So there's a lot of negotiating, and there's a lot of psychology that goes into what's publicly leaked and what's publicly discussed, and how it sets up. Because I think we'd all say, yeah, June 8th, oh yeah, June 8th is fine. But Neil, what if we started talking about June 8th in May? Then, well, the first chance they got, there it is, June 8th. Yep, ran right into it. But no, June 1st was the day that was, you know, so that's kind of my thought on it. And, you know, and I think they, you know, like this whole, you know, the NCAA Oversight Committee just threw out this four-phase plan, and what do you know, it got leaked to three major media entities and essentially trotted out in front of the public. And they kind of, you know, wet their finger and stuck it up in the air and said, okay, let's leak this out to some national media. Let's see what everybody thinks about this calendar. Is there any backlash? Anybody? Are we hearing anything? No? Okay, well, there's going to be a vote next week, and yep, it passed.
The Oxford Exxon podcast is also brought to you by Blue Delta Jeans. Our friends at Blue Delta are pleased to announce the Blue Delta studio is now open Monday through Saturday, 10 to 6. If you have jeans to pick up or if you're ready to get measured for your own Blue Delta jeans, don't hesitate to drop by or reach out to Blue Delta to schedule an appointment. While you're in, don't forget to check out Blue Delta's new line of Georgia milled duck canvas fabrics. Strong and durable, these are the ultimate made to last pants. Info at BlueDeltaJeans.com, on email or on social media at Blue Delta Jeans, whichever way is easier for you. Give the Blue Delta Jeans team a shout and they'll be glad to see you at Blue Delta Jeans. We're also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you are in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan's the place to go. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles, great lease deals as well. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Also brought to you by Dead Soxy. The bundle packs have been broken out. You can now purchase any of the Father's Day styles individually or as the bundle. Several customers reached out to Dead Soxy requesting that they do that because they didn't have kids or the kids were not of the age. And as Dead Soxy always does, when you ask, they listen. And so you go to deadsoxy.com. Better hurry, though. Get those orders in by tomorrow if you want to get them to Dad in time for Father's Day. deadsoxy.com. We're also brought to you by the Iron Horse Grill. Iron Horse Grill, built as the Armor Smokehouse in 1906, this legendary Jackson landmark is a true icon of Mississippi's rich heritage. Twice, the Iron Horse Grill has burned partially down, but it's risen from the ashes like never before. Live music four times per week, the perfect place to enjoy lunch, dinner, or Sunday brunch. It recently added the largest outdoor patio in Jackson along the Illinois Central Railroad. So you can also check out the Mississippi Music Experience Museum on the second floor of the restaurant. Make it part of your next stop in Jackson at 320 East Pearl Street. We are also brought to you by our friends at Pinnacle Trust. Pinnacle Trust, based in Madison, Mississippi. They've got clients in multiple states, advisors in several states as well. Founded in 1997, Pinnacle Trust provides detailed, specialized investment management, financial planning, retirement planning for individuals and businesses, and much more. They treat investing like a commodity. Decisions are made using objective information and research, not emotions. So regardless of your level of wealth, Pinnacle Trust will sit down with you, listen to your goals, study your expenses, and put forth a comprehensive, detailed financial and retirement plan built just for you. It's pintrust.com, P-I-N-N-trust.com. Mention you heard about Pinnacle Trust on the podcast. You'll get 10% off of your first year's fee. And we're brought to you by John Edwards of Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. If you're ready to get out after 3+ months of pandemic, a lot of things are starting to open up again. You want to get a good deal on your travel, John can take care of you there. He's been traveling for 4 decades, basically. He knows the extra attention that's needed to make a special trip one that creates a lifetime of unique memories. What you do is you give him some parameters, you give him a budget, and he'll give you a list of options that you won't find on your own. And no, you don't have to live in or near Memphis to take advantage of his services. 901-494-3387 or send him an email at jedwards@regencytravel.net. First time clients can save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast. The Ole Miss Rebels and head coach Lane Kiffin want you all aboard this season. Renew your 2020 season tickets by the end of today, June 15th, with their no risk ticket option as Coach Kiffin brings his innovative offense back to the SEC. For more information, visit fb.olemisstix.com. That's fb.olemisstix.com. Get rewarded all season long in 2020 by downloading the free Coca-Cola Rewards app today. Simple. Attend home athletic events, earn points, win prizes. Download the free app from the Google Play Store or App Store today by searching Rebel Rewards or visit rebelrewards.com. Rebel Rewards, be rewarded. And are you ready? Coach Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss Rebels are ready to make a splash in the SEC West. Renew your 2020 season tickets and receive a Lane Kiffin bobblehead. For more information on how to renew, it's fb.olemisstix.com. Again, fb.olemisstix.com. We're also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. They also offer their customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000 and refund ATM fees nationwide. To learn more, go to liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And we're brought to you by Bluff City Advisory Group, dedicated to building the future you desire. Founded in Memphis in 2019, their team is comprised of established and seasoned financial experts who came together to serve individuals and families of their beloved hometown. Bluff City values providing quality advice, experience, and access to all their clients, and they invite an open dialogue beyond your annual review. They believe that everyone deserves financial security. No matter your level of wealth or financial goal, they'll serve as an advocate and a guide to grow a portfolio that is fruitful and sustainable for you. 901-365-3447 or email Ben, that's B-E-N, at bluffcityadvisory.com. And we're brought to you by Whitney McNutt, Tommy Morgan Incorporated Realtors, serving you for all your real estate needs in Oxford and Tupelo. Whitney sells condos, land, commercial, and residential family homes. 662-567-2573 or 662-842-3844.
It's amazing who they link it to also. It's always the same people. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an accident. And you and I also know from those investigations, you know what, being a good, you know, I think you've won the same award I have. I've won investigate. Being a good investigative reporter, it's not like I'm digging through anybody's trash can. It's like I know people that want me to have the information because they trust that I'm going to put it out there accurately. That's being a good investigative reporter, not digging through the trash cans and following people home at night. I never did any crap like that.
I did once have to pick up some papers that were left for me, and they left them in a bush outside of the front door by a car dealership, and the Mobile.
Was this around 2001?
It was, yeah. It was. And I'll tell you this, that entire time that I got out of my car and went to said bush, I truly believed that my demise was imminent.
Hey, that was the same year that I met a bug man at a Crystals for an interview.
I'm sure.
An exterminator who told me what he'd heard in a conversation in an office. The infamous bug man interview.
Crazy times, man. Yeah.
But these are not issues where people have bugged the NCAA offices or picked up packages near bushes. We're in the internet age now, Neil. Those things don't happen.
No.
But there are fake Twitter and fake screen names and fake, you know, accounts where people will anonymously send you information. So I suppose that would be the digital equivalent. But that's not what's happening here. These are controlled leaks, and that's what you're going to see happen with programs as well. You know, which is controlled leak is another way to say recruiting coverage as well, for that matter. But it's all controlled leaks. And that's how, you know, they're going to judge the public perception and you know, what the public is willing to accept and frankly, what student athletes want. And I think this four-phase plan is a great plan. I kudos, the voluntary workouts. Now, but here's this, you know, do you and I really believe that from now until July 13th, these coaches will not witness any workouts or see any workout results from the players? Do we really believe that they're not going to have access to this?
Absolutely not.
No chance. I mean, in the Nick Saban Apple Watch thing, listen, that was ingenious. I got to give Saban credit. That was one of the most ingenious things I have ever heard, was to give all your kids Apple Watches so that your strength and conditioning staff can monitor their workouts from home. You can say that's an unfair advantage, but it's also a good way to keep up with your kids and make sure that they're not having any sort of aberration with their heart rhythms or things like. I thought that was one of the most ingenious, and that was just one example of Nick Saban and his ingenuity. And it's just like NASCAR. There's a fine line between ingenuity and cheating. If it's not in the rule book and you do it, is that cheating? Well, there's not a rule. If there's not a rule against it, it's really not. It's, you know, just like hiring 100 assistants or putting 20 people in a press box. And, you know, then it's up to the NCAA to say, well, Nick's got another idea. Is this one that we think everybody can do and keep the playing field level? And if so, then it's just good ingenuity and kudos to Saban for a good idea. Or
sure.
Or is bringing back former NFL players to practice maybe not a good idea because different programs don't have that sort of player available to help him in practice. So, I always like to bring up Saban. He's become a pretty fascinating figure to me.
Oh, he's I think over the course of decades, easily the most fascinating figure in all of college sports. He's revolutionized college football.
Yeah, he has.
He's made the NCAA think at every turn. You're covering one essentially, and I don't mean this in a bad way. It's essentially a copycat right. program. I mean, I've called Georgia, you know, Alabama East several times, and I mean it in a complimentary way. I mean, so many of the things that Kirby does, it seems like it's straight from the Nick Saban playbook. Lane Kiffin is here at Ole Miss now. He has been dealt a rough hand off the top because of the COVID thing prevented spring. It prevented recruiting. They haven't been able to bring kids to campus. He doesn't know. He said the other day on the telecon on a Zoom call that, you know, he realized he doesn't know his kids yet. And how could he? I mean, you can't build relationships without personal interaction. It's just not possible. But anyway, I mean, so many of the things that I think he's going to try to do are straight from the things that he learned during his time as the offensive coordinator at Alabama. So Saban has shaped this league. I don't know about you. I'm curious. I'm just thinking out loud. This was not something I planned to talk about with you. I think Saban has shaped this league more than anyone not named Roy Kramer or Mike Slive, and maybe more than Slive did.
Well, you just look at all the assistants floating around. There's no question, you know, but Lane's experience goes all the way back to the NFL and you know, the mistakes at Tennessee that he learned from. And every coach is made up. And it's just like a journalist. You think about it, Neil, all the different editors we've had, and good and bad, and coworkers and other beat guys and other stuff we've written. We all kind of take what we like and discharge. And coaches are the same way. I will say this about Kirby Smart and Nick Saban, though. One thing that's, I think, worth noting is that in the 8 years under Saban that Kirby was the defensive coordinator, they won four titles. And in the 5 years that Nick Saban's been at Alabama without Kirby as his defensive coordinator, he's only won one, and it took second and 26. So I think Kirby probably deserves a little bit more of the credit than he gets for his time at Alabama as a coordinator. I think he was part of what Alabama's defense once was. I don't know. I think Auburn just scored again. You know, Alabama's not what they were on defense. They're not coached well. And this theory that we all had, well, it's really Nick Saban that's the defensive coordinator. Well, then he's not doing a very good job because Auburn's beat him two out of the last 3 years, frankly, because of the defense, in my opinion. So, but to your point, you know, he has done some amazing things being willing to change on offense. And I think Lane Kiffin was one of the guys that made that happen. I think Lane kind of broke through that barrier and did things different and brought some excitement to the Alabama offense that really wasn't there before. And I think it took – Lane probably did some things that Nick approved of, and Lane probably did some things that he didn't on offense. And then afterwards said, well, all right. But Lane put his neck out there. I just – Lane's that coach, you know, that you can just imagine some of those conversations. You know, we didn't talk about that before the game, Lane. You know, you can just imagine that some of those conversations – took place and that Lane would be the guy that would push the envelope, you know, because that's what creative and leaders do. They push the envelope, and Lane Kiffin's a guy that pushes the envelope. And I think that's needed at Ole Miss. I think to win there, you've got to push the envelope. Now you better be careful which envelope you push.
Well, and you have to push it smartly. I mean, the thing about Freeze, it's the fascinating conversation. It's why I can have this conversation with people like you, and it can be enjoyable. I have this conversation with some of the national guys, and because they're so locked in their mantra, they don't get it. Freeze's problem was not that he cheated more than everybody else. Because he didn't. I mean, not because he didn't want to, because he didn't have the resources to. Freeze's problem was in the cheating that he did, he was sloppy. His program was sloppy. Everybody cheats, but it's a matter of there's two things that the really smart coaches do well. One, they have layers and layers and layers between what happens and where they are. There's all sorts of layers. Not only plausible deniability, but deniability. They don't know. They don't have to know. They don't need to know. And then the next thing is they're just not sloppy about it. And they also know when to call it off. They also know when it's not worth it. To me, that's one of the really strong points of that Alabama program. They don't get involved in a lot of the super nasty recruiting battles because they step out of them. They back out. They say it's not worth it. This is going to get squirrely. There's another player out there. Let's go get him. And Freeze fell into those traps. Freeze stayed involved in the Leo Lewis thing long after some smart people inside his program said, let's get out of this. This is not worth it. He's not good enough. Let's move on. And his ego got involved in it. That was the downfall of Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss. It was not that they were just throwing money left and right, because the truth is, Mike, they didn't have it to throw.
Right. I suppose there's limitations everywhere. And the whole Mississippi, the state of Mississippi is fascinating to me. I just, the Mike Leach hire to me, just it absolutely looks like a train wreck waiting to happen. There's already been some things that had they happened at different times would have absolutely blown up. I just don't see it, Neil. There was a time when what Mike Leach was doing was so different than everyone else, and but the SEC's caught up. I mean, maybe if Mike Leach comes to the league 10 years ago, all the razzmatazz passing game, and everybody goes, oh my goodness, what's that? But it's already here, and it's been here. And if you aren't going to win by doing things different, because I don't think what he does is that different than what we see from, he certainly doesn't have the players. And to me, Mississippi State's a program. I think there's different ways. I don't know, maybe this is fair or unfair, and you may agree or disagree. But, to me, Mississippi State, to win, they've got to be that team. They remind me a lot of the team that I covered where I went to school at Michigan State. You better have a chip on your shoulder. That better be a part of your identity, because you're not going to be – Mississippi State's not going to be the most celebrated school in the state of Mississippi. That's just not the lay of the land. Now, they've done some wonderful things with their campus, and Starkville looks very different than it did 25 years ago. It's a very nice place, but it ain't Oxford. And Ole Miss is the program that, when you think about Mississippi, that's the first program that comes to mind. It's like Alabama and Auburn. It's like University of Michigan, Michigan State, or Oklahoma State. So a large degree, I think that what Mike Leach is going to – I think he's a square peg in a round hole there, Neil. I think that was a bad hire, and I think there's probably already some buyer's remorse.
Yeah, I can't say that I said it at the time, because I didn't. But the tweet – and, man, had he done that tweet a couple months later after – with where we are right now, from a societal standpoint, it's that's going to be difficult for him to overcome. I think this is going to be a very painful year for him. I think, in many ways, no fault of his own, other than the tweet, which I have absolutely no doubt whatsoever that Mike Leach did not mean that tweet to be racist at all. There's no doubt in my mind that Mike Leach thought that tweet was funny. It was about the pandemic in his mind. It was about kind of picking fun at marriage, people stuck together in the same house for weeks and months on end. There's no doubt in my mind that that's where his heart was. Zero doubt. However, man, it did not resonate that way with his players. His players aren't on campus. They just got back. I don't know how much he's able to truly explain that away. And in this charged environment that we're living in today, I think it's going to be really difficult for him to overcome it. I think it's going to be hard for him, even if he does everything right and pushes every right button. I think it's going to be hard for him to win and earn the respect of his players.
I think it's going to be hard for him to be NC State. And I don't think the pirate jokes are going to be funny when you're losing football games. You can win the press conference, but you and I both know if you don't win the games,
yeah.
And Lane knows that. You know, better at recreating themselves than Lane. I mean, you talk about a guy that's been through the fire and been the phoenix and risen. And listen, I've been as big a critic of Lane Kiffin as anyone. But at some point, I tip my cap and say, this son of a gun doesn't stay down. And there's a lot to be said for that. And I do believe people can learn from their mistakes. And I think Lane's 1 year at Tennessee was one big mistake. I think he would admit that. But I've got to tell you, I'm impressed that the guy has continued to recreate himself, that he continues to show resilience. And you know what? He might just get it right this time. And you know, I'm on the fence on this one. I'm not predicting that Lane Kiffin's going to fail at Ole Miss. I absolutely am not predicting that. Nothing would surprise me. Now, he's had some, you know, like I said, the year at Tennessee was costly, but that wasn't just Lane. You take a look at the staff that he had, and you know, you talk about playing with dynamite. Take a look at some of the guys that were his assistant coaches. And, you know, speaking of recreating themselves, how about Ed Orgeron going from a guy that, you know, that was on the SEC's, you know, boo-boo list, you know, and now he's just this angelic great figure of the Southeast. And it's like, wow, did that ever change in 10 years? I mean.
In 1 year.
Take a break in the show to tell you about Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Settle County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting and understand your market. A leader in condo financing in Oxford, and the flow down option where you can lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com. Also brought to you by G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar in Oxford, also Tyson Drugs on the Square in Holly Springs. Both those locations are open for regular business hours. Tyson's is utilizing a walk-up window, and G&M is offering curbside service there in Oxford. Both stores are dedicated to local delivery and still able to deliver same day as well. 662-236-2222. The podcast brought to you by Visit Oxford. VisitOxfordMS.com is the website. Click the very top, see how to support Oxford during COVID-19. You can see a list of all retailers, restaurants with curbside, with delivery options to help you out there if you need that list. Also, ways to support hospitality workers who are out of jobs right now in Oxford between Tip Roulette and some other options that you have. Again, visit OxfordMS.com. Podcast also brought to you by Special Orthopedic Group. They are open in Tupelo and Oxford. You can skip the ER for urgent ortho-related injuries at both locations. They're offering virtual health telemedicine. Patients have direct access to all SOG physicians and nurse practitioners. Patients have 24-hour access to appointments at 662-767-4200 or SOGMS.com. No referral is needed. Walk-ins are welcome. And then last but not least, we're brought to you by In-House Interior and Design, 662-681-6241. You can call, you can text. They are available for you. I talked to Nikki this week. They've been picking up more clients because people are home right now. They're seeing things around their house they want to change, they want to fix up. They offer new client gifts. They offer dorm room appointments whenever that does come with discounts as well. So you can find out more, text or call 662-681-6241.
I mean, you know, I mean, even after Joe Burrow's junior year, there was a lot of, you know, Orgeron, he's on borrowed time. And now, I mean,
I just mean how he's perceived by the public.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
What a great guy.
Yeah, well.
What a sweetheart.
But you know what? So much of that is fit, right? So much of it's the antithesis of Mike Leach and Starkville. And I agree with you completely, by the way.
Right.
I think it's a bad fit. Ed Orgeron, Ed Orgeron did not fit at Ole Miss. There was he was never going to fit at Ole Miss. He could have won here and he wouldn't have fit at Ole Miss. But he goes to LSU, and because of his accent's not a deal there. It's endearing there. His mannerisms are endearing there. He sort of fits that culture because he's part of that culture. And I mean, I'm a Louisiana guy. I'm not making fun at all. He fits there. And then when you win, everything changes. But you know, if you put Ed Orgeron today at North Carolina, it would be a culture shock.
The University of Michigan.
Yeah, it just wouldn't work. Notre Dame, it wouldn't work.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
Notre Dame.
Yeah, it works at LSU, and in many ways, it's one of the things that's impressed me with Kiffin. And we've had very limited access to him because, obviously, like I said, there was no spring. There was no, you know, there's just been no opportunity for him to. Not that he necessarily would, but there's been no real opportunity for him to walk over on a practice field. Maybe, you know, 10 minutes before a spring practice in shorts starts. There's been no opportunity for him to walk over and just, you know, shoot the shit because we weren't out there and it didn't happen. So we don't all know each other. But what I like about Kiffin that I find to be refreshing and frankly, in today's environment, I think it's critical, is he seems really genuine. Like he's this kind of laid back guy. He's very quiet. He's very introspective. He's very smart. There's no coach speak. You ask a question, you get an answer. He'll tell you he doesn't know. He admits he doesn't really know his players yet. I find all that to be pretty refreshing. And here, you know, I mean, I think after Freeze, who was so packaged, and then after Luke, who, and we'll talk about him in a minute if you'd like, after Luke, who just never really had a chance. I mean, Matt never really had a chance here. And looking back on it, it was just a bad idea for everyone involved. But Kiffin's attitude's kind of fitting here. It's kind of it fits right now. And
I think
right.
It does.
He's got to win. He's got to win. And I think this coming season is going to be a challenge for fans a little bit because his timetable got slowed down in so many ways because of COVID. And he'll tell you that. He'll tell you, hey, first-year staffs really got hurt by this. He said, if I were at FAU still, you know, in my fourth year there, I wouldn't be worried about this. It'd be fine. I mean, we'd get through it. It'd be some challenges, but it wouldn't be a big deal. Here, it's a pretty big deal.
Oh, no question. And I think you're right. I do think that Lane kind of fits what Ole Miss wants. Ole Miss took a chance on Lane Kiffin. They did, but I think it was a calculated chance, and I think it was, you know, with a vision in mind. And when you operate on and you make decisions with a vision and calculated rather than out of fear, and we've seen some other coaching hires, Neil, that were knee jerk reactions that I don't think were really well thought out. We're desperate. You know, I mean, like I said, I just think Mike Leach to you know, Mississippi, it's like they're two sinking ships that, you know, they both reach for one another. I mean, Leach wanted out of Washington State so bad and Mississippi State wanted to make some sort of splash so bad. And, you know, and I to be honest, I thought that I'm not so sure that Moorhead was a horrible coach. I don't know that we ever really found out. Had a lot of talent the first year, did some good things, didn't have as much talent second year, didn't do as many good things, and before you know it, he's gone. And it's like, well, I never really got to know him. I mean, I don't know if he ever could have or would have, but whatever culture he was trying to build there never really took shape. I knew he had a great defensive coordinator, and Bob Shoup was one of the best in the country. In fact, I think they led the nation in total defense that first year, didn't they? Had he led the nation in total offense, he probably wouldn't get fired. I think right now the media also is very discriminatory when it comes to offensive versus defensive teams. And I say that speaking from a Georgia point of view. You know, Georgia had the best defense in the country last year. I'll throw some numbers at you, and maybe you're aware and maybe you weren't. Are you surprised to learn that they had the number one scoring defense and the number one rush defense and the number three total defense and the number eight pass efficiency defense? Would that surprise you to know that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then maybe you weren't surprised when they only had one guy make All-SEC on defense or only have one guy on preseason All-SEC defense this year. Because I'm not so sure how you can put up those numbers with the schedule and not have first-team guys, but I look and see Alabama guys everywhere. And they gave up 40-some points to Auburn 2 weeks after Georgia shut out Auburn at Jordan-Hare for three quarters.
Well, you and I
just don't know what people are looking at here, well, except for the name on the jersey or the helmet.
That's it. And so many of the people that do the voting don't. They don't do any homework. The same people do the voting every year. It's
right.
It's based on that's the buddy system. Come on, man. When I was in Mobile, I was an AP voter because I was deemed to be, you know, unbiased. And I come here, I cover Ole Miss for Rivals, which is now as much mainstream as any newspaper might be. And no, you can't do it because you're biased. I'm the same guy. Same voter. If anything, I did more homework than most people. I was never hostage to my what I had voted for the week before. I voted for what I saw at that time. So I don't know. Anyway, I'm kind of beside the point. But
yeah.
Anyway, I'm curious to get your thoughts on a couple things. There's been a lot of talk about Dan Mullen in Florida and how they're closing the gap on Kirby Smart and Georgia. Obviously, I see the West a lot more than I see the East. I haven't seen Georgia in a little while. Florida's on Ole Miss's schedule this year, but we don't see the Gators routinely. So, you know how that is. You probably are more up on the East than you are on the West at this point. I'm more up on the West than you are the East. Is that a narrative that has some truth to it, or is this still Georgia's division to win running away?
Yeah, I'd say both. You know, I do think Florida's improved under Dan Mullen. I do think that, you know, Kyle Trask is a better quarterback than Franks was, which makes you wonder why he wasn't starting ahead of him to begin with. But, you know, sometimes coaches inherit situations and you kind of go with what you got, and it's kind of the safer route. I mean, most coaches know, nobody wants to beat themselves or take too many chances. I mean, that was the Hal Mumme ways of the 1990s, as we recall, and I quickly date myself with that reference. But I think Florida is getting better, but there's still holes in Florida. I just think they're a vogue pick. You know, somebody made the point, well, if you pick Georgia to win, nobody clicks the story. I hate to say that, but to me, it's a clickbait story. I mean, Florida, there's no reason to believe, based on what happened in last year's Florida-Georgia game and who Florida has coming back and who Georgia has coming, there's no reason to believe that Florida's offense will be any more effective than they were last year when they had 175 total yards and 3 points going into the fourth quarter in Jacksonville. You know, before Kirby, you know, backs the secondary up and starts trading yardage for time. So, you know, why do we think Florida is going to beat Georgia? Well, we really don't. Now, Athlon made a good argument, though, and I hope Ole Miss fans don't take offense to this, but, you know, Florida plays Ole Miss and a reloaded LSU from the West, and Georgia plays Alabama and Auburn. So is there a scenario where maybe Florida wins both of their games against the West and maybe Georgia loses both of theirs and Georgia could beat Florida but still not win the East? Well, there is. That would be the scenario, that Auburn and Alabama beat Georgia. I don't think
anybody would take offense to that. I mean, that's very rational. I mean, you know, Ole Miss, this is year one of a new staff that didn't get a spring. They're not going to get much of a summer either. And LSU loses everybody. They've got to replace everything.
Yeah, are they going to get another quarterback that doesn't have to go to class for 2 years? Did you hear it? You know, and I think I might have offended. I didn't mean to offend somebody. They needed to retire Joe Burrow's. They say they wanted to retire Joe Burrow's jersey. I said, well, you better give him a GPS directions because he's never been on campus. He won't find the ceremony. I mean, you want to talk about – I guess he had to go on campus. They had to bus him to the game or whatever. But I mean, the guy didn't take a class for 2 years. I mean, well, he didn't take a class on campus, Neil.
It was just online stuff.
Is this for 2 years? I mean, to me, this is just – I say it's remarkable, but then I say, you know what? In a Nick Saban kind of way, this is the future, man. You know, one thing that's going to come out of – I keep taking these detours on your show.
No, I like the detours.
You know what? You know, one thing that's going to come out of COVID-19 is online classes for athletes. The student-athlete, the days of them having to be at 8 a.m. math lab on campus are over.
You think so? Across the board or just at the big schools?
Well, the schools that play football and want to win at it.
Is that a good thing?
Being honest.
Is that a good thing? Is it a good thing for the kids? I don't know. You tell me. Is it a good thing for the kids? Because so much of the college experience, right, is that you – I mean, take football out for just a second. So much of the college experience is about wanting young people to interact with other young people from different walks of life, from different places, with different viewpoints, and to learn how to function in that environment. So that when they go to work one day, when you take a job at a Fortune 500 company X and you walk into your first team meeting, there's people from different races, different age groups, different sexes, different political viewpoints, and you're able to function in that. That's the social part of college. I get a football player going to Alabama, his goal is to be a really good football player and win football games and get ready for the NFL. I get that, but not everybody makes it to the NFL. I mean, there is something to be said for the college experience. And when you put these kids on campus, and this gets to another topic that we probably should talk about in a second. When you put these kids on campus and they are nothing but football players, boy, you are really straining the credulity of the whole amateurism model.
Well, it's changing right before our eyes. I mean, name, image, likeness is going to happen next year. It's going to be a huge game changer. You know, players are going to have contracts at probably $1 million, $500,000 for the top players. they'll be hosting parties and going out on the jet skis on the weekend with the teammates, paying for everything. I mean, the dynamics, the guy that you say, wait your turn, and it's a team thing, says, no, I'm going somewhere else where I can get my own deal. I mean, it's a complete game. Name, image, likeness is a complete game changer coming our way. Whether you like it or whether you don't, whether you think it's right or whether you think it's wrong.
Oh, it's coming. There's no point in even fighting about it. It's coming. I mean, and I think the players, if they play the, I wrote this morning. The players, if they play their cards right, it's one of the interesting things. They've never had more leverage than they have today. The players, they're literally on campus right now, on closed campuses, getting ready for a football season that will be played potentially with no fans in the stands. They've never had, no matter what you think, no matter what your political viewpoint is, it doesn't matter. They've never had more leverage than they have today. That being said, the leverage, if you envision a glass of water or soda or beer or whatever beverage of choice, it's finite. It's not infinite. There comes a point where you pour the leverage out, and it goes from a stream to drops to nothing. Like, I think they can get no penalty transfer. I think they can get that passed with just some pressure right now. Name, image, likeness is going to happen. I do think if they try to take some of the social stances too far, there will be a rebellion. There will be a pushback. Probably the better term than rebellion. I think there will be pushback. I think people will say, nope, that's too far. Not going to go there. And so that's, I'm fascinated to see now that the players for the first time really have true leverage, how they use it.
No doubt. And how do the teams manage it? And, you know, for a while it was, well, you better have the best coach. And then it was, you better have the best facilities. Well, now you better have the best name, image, likeness management, because this is the new arms race. This is the new. I mean, just when Georgia thought they'd caught up with this $81 million football building that's going to be completed next April, kids are going to be like, yeah, that's great, but where's my deal? What hat am I wearing after the game? And, oh, by the way, that rule about freshmen not talking, yeah, I ain't coming to your school if you're applying that to me, because I'm going to talk and I'm going to get my brand out there. And if you don't let me talk, I'm going to put it on social media anyway. So you can make up your mind, coach. Do you want him to talk to the reporters after the game with a social media expert standing next to him and one of your personnel people, or do you want him to put it on Instagram that night without any supervision? So there's a lot that needs to, you know, the face of college football is changing before our eyes. What Joe Burrow did was, you know, what LSU did with having a 2-year graduate student who didn't go into classes may raise eyebrows now, but that's going to become the norm, in my opinion. And as far as if LSU wants to retire his jersey, that's great. It would set a new precedent. I don't know of any other graduate transfer that's had their jersey, didn't even sign with the school or take a class on campus there. But if that's what gets your jersey retired at LSU, then, you know, maybe that's what does it at LSU. And maybe, you know, even now we're having these discussions. And I've talked to you about McGuire and Sosa before. I thought you had some strong feeling. But there's people now saying, put them in the Hall of Fame. We don't care. You know, just put an asterisk. You know, you know, what we're willing to accept as a society is crazy. I mean, look at college basketball, Neil. You can be a college basketball coach and be in the Hall of Fame before your career is over with. Jim Boeheim, and still have NCAA violations. Hey, he's in the Hall of Fame. What are you going to do, take him out? No. Well, I guess there's a different standard there then, isn't there? So these things are fluid and constantly changing. But and right now we're in the midst of, you know, you mentioned Nick Saban as a revolutionary. I would say there's room for another revolutionary. Who knows? He might be right there in Ole Miss. I don't know anybody that handles social media any better than Lane Kiffin.
I think Kiffin is better prepared for what's coming than Saban is. I do.
I would agree.
I do. I think he's – because what everything you just said about name, image, likeness is spot on. So for those of you out there that are going, no, he's full of it. No, he's not. He's right. Whether you might not like that, but that is exactly what is coming. And like, if you tell, I don't think Nick Saban's going to like that. Nick Saban's going to surrender a level of control of his program. Dabo Swinney is going to surrender a level of control of his program that I don't know that he's comfortable with.
Right.
I think a guy like Lane Kiffin, I think he's going to be cool with that. I think he's going to be able to, because Lane Kiffin's not the guy who dresses like a coaching robot. I mean, he came here and there's an air service. They charter jets. They're upscale. It's called Nicholas Air. They do great work. I can't afford them, and you can't afford them, but really rich people can afford them and love what they give them. And Kiffin cut that deal pretty much right away. And so he's out on the recruiting trail wearing his Nicholas Air hat, and they're flying him around. And he's smart. He gets it. You know, I mean, he's a guy that's maintained relationships with some of the guys at USC when he was there as a quarterback's coach or a coordinator or whatnot. And I don't think there's any question that he's very good. Like you said, he's very good at brand building, and he's going to be able to show players how to do that kind of thing. And that is going to be very attractive to kids on the recruiting trail. They want to go someplace where they can build their brand. And I always talk about perception is reality. Mm-hmm. When they're coming out of high school, even though privately people might be thinking, man, this kid, I know he's Johnny Five Star, but this kid's got some holes in his game. And they might be right, but Johnny Five Star's perception of himself is that I'm a star, I'm an instant star, and I need to have a brand right away because in 3 years I'm going to the NFL and I want to have a ready-made brand. And at the moment that he signs his letter of intent, that perception might as well be reality because that's what he believes. And so you've got to have a plan in place for that. And so that is going to be the next big challenge for these schools is it's so many people talk about cheating. Well, now the cheating's above board. It's not cheating anymore. It's going to be interesting, like in a state like Georgia, and we're rambling around, but the state that's the best example is Alabama. If you're a car dealer in Birmingham, you're running a Ford dealership. Even though you're a big Alabama fan, you know Auburn fans buy cars too. UAB fans buy cars too. You're gonna be careful with how you do that. I mean, if the Alabama quarterback endorses, you know, Johnny Johnson Ford, you're gonna want the Auburn quarterback doing the same thing. And then, quite frankly, just to cover yourself, you're gonna want the UAB quarterback on that billboard or on the social media, endorsing your brand. I mean, that's all coming.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating, you know, and that's why what's true today may not be true in a year, you know, where we're at right now. I mean, you know, certainly we'll never replicate 2020, thank goodness, but 2021's got plenty of surprises, you know. The word normal might as well be thrown out with college football. I don't know what normal is. When was the last really normal period that we had when you think about it? I mean, it has been a very fluid changing, but the changes that are coming now, Neil, are absolutely drastic. I'm not saying we're playing on a different planet, but name, image, likeness, and one-time transfer is going to be shockingly different in concert because next fall I think they're both supposed to be in place. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. And if you're Ole Miss, I think it's a reason for encouragement because you're saying, you know what, status quo is not good for Ole Miss. You need something to be shaken up for Ole Miss to be able to rise again in the West.
You're exactly right. It's a great point.
You need something that can shake the thing that Nick Saban is absolutely an iron claw on right now on how things are. And this is a game changer. You know, Nick Saban and his his team has perfected the gasoline engine. You need the electric car to come because it gives you a chance, and that's what's happening. You know, it seemed, you know, and you mentioned Georgia being a copycat program, and I certainly if you work for Nick Saban for 11 years, you'd be stupid not to take some of the program building things that he does. Of course, Kirby also worked for Bobby Bowden and Mark Richt for a year and played major Division I college football at Georgia. So he's got some insights himself that Nick doesn't have, some twists, if you will. But because Kirby's 44 years old, I think he's also in a good position to deal with it. Even though he's got maybe that throwback old school guy in him, because he's only 44, I think he's got the ability to change. The question with Kirby for me is burnout, which is the question for any coach that works as hard as he does. I mean, he's already going into year five, and that may not sound like much, but let's remember Steve Spurrier only coached at Florida for 12 years. There's no such thing as forever anymore in coaching, Neil. If you coach more than 5 years at a school, you're a dinosaur. You just look and see. These coaches, they don't last because if they don't do good enough, they get fired. And if they do good enough, their chances are they're moving on to a bigger, better job. How many guys really stay at one place after 5 years.
Oh yeah, the Kirk Ferentz kind of thing is never is too big of a word, but it is going to be incredibly rare moving forward.
Oh yeah, I mean you're talking probably less than 10% of the coaches that can pull that off. You know, I can think in the top of my head maybe 10 right now, but guys like Urban Meyer, burnout factor. The guy Chris Peterson, Washington, burnout factor. Bob Stoops, Oklahoma, burnout factor. And when you're making $4 to $7 million a year, that ain't such a bad thing to walk away with $35 million at 50 years old.
No, they go home and they're exhausted, and the recruiting trail is vicious and it's constant, and they go home and someone finally says to them, "Hey, why are we doing this? We have enough. Let's go enjoy that beach home that we've always talked about. Let's go do it.
That beach home that we bought 3 years ago that we've been to twice.
Yeah, let's go hang out for 2 months. Let's go see the grandkids. Yeah, exactly. Now, what's going to be interesting, Mike, and I'm probably keeping you too long. What is going to be interesting is if the COVID thing ends up being a game changer at the gate this year. And there's no money. A lot of these coaches, you know, I mean, that have these rollover clauses in their contracts, a lot of these schools are going to say, "Hey, look, we got to do some things to start mitigating some loss here. We don't need to roll this contract over." Or a coach comes in and says, I want 11 games. I want a $2 million raise. And when the schools say, we don't have it. We can't do it. It's not in the budget.
Yeah, you wonder when that's going to happen. You wonder when we'll all learn a lesson from Major League Baseball here. Or maybe Major League Baseball will learn a lesson from itself. You know, the greed that's keeping them off the field right now.
No, they'll never learn. That whole deal was about winning a negotiation. That's all that was. That was the owners. By God, we're not going to lose a negotiation. That was the players saying, we are dug in on this 100%. We are dug in on the 100% prorated salary, and we're not budging. And the two sides just stared each other down, and they're killing the game. It's like the basketball thing, and I don't think it's going to come to it. But you know, we agreed to go to Orlando. Now we won't go to Orlando. Maybe now we don't want to play the season. When you blow up that CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, and then you try to get the owners to write up a new one in the midst of a pandemic that might or might not affect attendance next season, good luck. I mean, good luck with that. That maybe that works out, maybe it doesn't. I'm curious, going back to football for a minute before we stop, you covered Sam Pittman at Georgia, the offensive line coach there. He's now the head coach at Arkansas. I was thinking about programs that could benefit from shaking up the status quo with name, image, and likeness. And Arkansas sort of came to mind. There's a lot of money up there, tons of Fortune 500 companies up there. They obviously have had a difficult time recruiting the kind of athletes in quantity and quality that it takes to beat Alabama, to beat Auburn, to beat LSU, hell, to beat Ole Miss. Is Pittman the kind of guy that is adjustable enough to benefit from that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I never really thought about Arkansas as being a bit, you know, between Jerry Jones and Walmart, there's a lot of possibilities there at the top of the food chain. So, you know, Sam's exactly the kind of guy. Sam's got a chance to be his own Bobby Bowden type of figure. I mean, he's that beloved guy that everybody enjoys, and but you and I both know has been around long enough to, you know, have that horse sense, as they say. And what is horse sense really? It just means the guy's a lot smarter than he pretends to be. And, you know, he all sucks. You know, Gene Stallings was a guy like that. Always pretended like he was just an old farmer. And are you kidding me? He was an absolute genius.
When you'd sit down with him one-on-one and have a conversation, you'd realize just how smart he was.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, well, he coached under Tom Landry, and he coached under Paul Bear Bryant, and he could coach. I mean, Stallings was just pure brilliance. But, you know, when he would talk, he wouldn't say much, and so therefore you thought, you know. And Sam Pittman, you know, even though he does the cheer when he gets his commit, you know, there's a lot more behind Sam than just that corny cheer. I mean, this is a guy that – you know, knows how to team build and knows how to build relationships. And, you know, he might be serving you cookies and milk when you come to interview him for the job, but, you know, he probably already knows you like that type of cookie, and he's got a number in mind. And by the time you leave the house, he's going to get it. I think Sam Pittman is a sneaky good hire. And I didn't think that at first, Neil, but now that I I think about the damage control that needs to go on there, and the healing, and the handshakes, and the, you know, there's a lot that needs to happen for Arkansas to get their fans back. I mean, they've really put their fans through the ringer with some of these coaching hires they've made. They've just kind of jerked them all around and made some really bad hires since Houston Nutt, actually. I thought, you know, I don't know, I may get in trouble for saying it, but I thought he did a damn good job. I really did. You know, they almost beat Tennessee in 90, should have beat, and then did beat. I mean, he had Arkansas playing as good as anybody in the SEC in the 90s, and I don't know when else we could ever say that again. But I thought he was a good coach. I don't know any more than that. I know there's plenty more that you know that I don't know, but I thought he was a good football coach. But I do think Sam Pittman is a guy. But a lot's got to line up. A lot's got to line up. The door's got to open. You know, like, for example, what's going on in the East with Florida and Tennessee and Kentucky. Are they getting better? Yes. Unfortunately for them, it just, you know, Kirby and Georgia finally have their dynasty together. They finally have a huge donor base that's, you know, given them the window for $170 million in facilities in 4 years. That was what was missing from Georgia. They've got the in-state talent. They're the one big show in town. They're the Ohio State of the South. It's the sleeping giant. And so, you know, as I compare that to Arkansas or Ole Miss for that matter, you might be improving, but if that Alabama dynasty doesn't crumble, or if that Texas A&M dynasty doesn't slow down, because, you know, they're doing some remarkable things, speaking of resources down there in College Station, you know, everybody's got a fast car. It's like NASCAR. You know, there's usually out of those 40 cars, I used to be 43 cars, but out of those cars, you know, there's really four or five that can win. And then you got to keep your fenders clean and stay out of the wall, and then you got to kind of get lucky at the end. And it's kind of like that in the SEC. You know, there's four or five teams, and you got to stay lucky, and the right guys have to stay healthy, and you got to get the right bounces during the right times during the season. And then in the end, like Alabama did in 2017 when they lost by double digits to Auburn and somehow still made the college football, that's getting lucky, folks. That's getting lucky. When you don't have to play in the league championship, you essentially get a bye. Georgia had to play an extra game. And then you get to play in New Orleans, and Georgia has to fly 5 hours to play Oklahoma. That's called getting lucky. And that's what happened to Alabama in 2017. And it's happened to other teams in the West. You and I have seen teams win the West, and we don't know how they did it, or in hindsight, they probably shouldn't have. But you got to put yourself in the position, and that's kind of what it comes down to. So we've covered a lot of ground about a lot of things.
Yeah.
People are probably going, I don't know if I should feel better or feel worse after this conversation. Probably all the above.
Yeah, I think all of the above. It's fascinating stuff. I really appreciate it. It's always fun to talk to you. I've known you a long time, and I've always been a fan of your work. So I appreciate you spending, a whole hour here with us. So thanks very much, and enjoy the rest of your summer, and I won't see you at Media Days. I guess I'll see you virtually at Media Days, and hopefully somewhere down the road we'll actually be in the same place at the same time.
That sounds great, Neil. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Bye.
Bye.
Our thanks to Mike for his time today. Hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. We'll be back Wednesday with the podcast. Not exactly sure what those plans are. Working on a couple of different guests. We'll do a live show once or twice this week. I think that's the plan. And then have some things for you later in the week as well. Kind of flying by the seat of our pants a little bit during the pandemic, like most people are. But appreciate you being here today for the podcast. Again, thanks to Mike Griffith. And we will be back on Wednesday with another edition of the Oxford Exxon podcast. Until then, take care.